Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Cassius Char. I'm a vascular surgeon at Yale, and welcome to our afternoon session on the contemporary management of IVC filters. We're going to have an outstanding panel of six speakers. The talks are going to be 12 minutes each, and we will reserve all the questions for the end of the session. Our speakers are going to give their presentation and are going to join us on the panel, and they will be receiving all questions in the end. And we will start with the first talk today. It's going to be given by Dr. Michael Goh, who's joining us from Ohio State University, and he'll be talking about the indications for IVC filter placement.
Thank you, Cassius, for the invitation to speak. Good afternoon, everybody. I don't have any relevant disclosures. I guess my only disclosure would be that I'm decidedly conservative when it comes to IVC filtration, so I'm going to start this talk on indications by first highlighting the most common complication of IVC filters, that is, of course, recurrent DVT. It is a fact that IVC filters increase the risk of DVT recurrence. This was seen in the original PREPICT trial. It's been seen in population-based studies, in industry trials, and in the Michigan Filter Registry. It is also a fact that IVC filters are associated with recurrent proximal DVT and ileocaval thrombosis. And why do we care? This is one of the reasons why I care. This is some manifestations of the post-thrombotic syndrome, including ulcerations here. It is true that caval thrombosis and recurrent proximal DVT are associated with the post-thrombotic syndrome. And in that group of patients, many will have venous claudication, venous ulceration, have recurrent hospitalizations, and have a disability. So let's start by looking at some of the guidelines, and there are many. Let's start with the ACCP, or the CHEST guidelines. We all know these, of course. In patients with acute DVT or PE, the CHEST guidelines recommend against the use of an IVC filter in addition to anticoagulation. And in patients with acute DVT or PE and some kind of contraindication to anticoagulation, they recommend the use of an IVC filter. They go on to recommend resumption of anticoagulation in all patients who were initially treated with IVC filtration as soon as their risk of bleeding resolves. I'm next going to highlight the SIR guidelines. These are probably the next most cited set of guidelines, Society for Interventional Radiology, and they expand the indications. As you can see here, the absolute indications at the top of the screen remain the same: contraindication or failure of anticoagulation, but they add on a group of relative indications, including ileocaval DVT, large free-floating proximal thrombus at the time of DVT thrombolysis, and then down here, this sort of important category of those at high risk of complication or at high risk of bleeding, but who actually haven't yet bled with treatment. The SIR guidelines also go on to add a category for prophylactic indications, and this sort of relatively poorly defined group of trauma, surgical, or medical patients with quote-unquote high risk of DVT. It is interesting that the SIR does have a category for contraindications to IVC filter placement. The two SIR contraindications to filter placement: no access to the cava or no space in the cava. So I'll defer editorial comment there. The AHA has a set of guidelines too. They're not quite as widely cited as the CHEST or the SIR guidelines, but being an influential organization and as large as it is, I thought it important to include those. And again, the AHA guidelines focus for the most part on absolute indications, failure of anticoagulation or some kind of complication of anticoagulation. They do have a set of recommendations regarding the choice of temporary or permanent IVC filters, but no category of prophylactic or relative indications. In Europe, the British Committee for Standards in Hematology tends to be the most cited document, and those two are relatively conservative. focusing on absolute indications for filters, failure of anticoagulation or complication of anticoagulation. They do add a relative indication for peripartum or perioperative patients within 1 month of acute VTE. And then they also specifically note that free-floating thrombus is not an indication for IVC filtration. The other set of European guidelines, the European Respiratory Society, are even more Spartan than the ACCP guidelines, focusing only on failure of anticoagulation or complication of anticoagulation. And for this audience of surgeons, the East trauma guidelines are very relevant. They add a level 3 recommendation for prophylactic IVC filtration in very high-risk trauma patients. And specifically, they're talking about patients with severe closed head injury, spinal cord injury, long bone fractures, or complex pelvic injury. So all of those disparate recommendations have been nicely distilled into this table by DeYoung and Minocha in a review published a couple years ago. So starting on screen left, you have your absolute indications, contraindication or failure of anticoagulation, and in the middle, that large category of relative indications, large free-floating thrombus at the time of lysis for DVT. And then here at the bottom, that sort of important but poorly defined category of those at high risk of complications of anticoagulations. And then screen right here, the prophylactic indications, the trauma, surgical, or medical patients at high risk who have not yet had VTE. And so, you know, my interpretation of the available data and all of these guidelines is this. I think that if you are placing a filter for an absolute indication on the screen left there, you're well defended in the literature, and it's likely that you're helping those patients. For the category in the middle, the relative indications, it's clear that you can find evidence in the literature to support those indications, but I question a little bit whether, in general, you're always helping those patients. And then finally, screen right, and we'll have another talk about prophylactic indications. I think it's very hard to find relatively high quality literature to support those prophylactic indications. And I do question a little bit whether or not you're actually hurting those patients. But of course, that's going to be the most controversial topic, and I'm sure something we'll talk about in the discussion. For this audience, I thought I would highlight a few specific categories of patients. The first is in bariatric surgery patients. Clearly, VTE is an important complication after bariatric surgery. And although PE gets a lot of notoriety, it's actually relatively rare these days. Again, going back to the guidelines, the ACCP suggests the use of the Caprini risk score for guiding DVT prophylaxis in bariatric surgery. Most bariatric surgery patients qualify as high risk, that is 5 points or more. And in those patients, DVT prophylaxis perioperatively, the ACCP recommends pharmacologic prophylaxis and mechanical prophylaxis, and actually does go on to say that for general bariatric and abdominopelvic surgery patients, an IVC filter should not be used for primary VTE prevention. The American Society for Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery similarly highlights the use of pharmacologic and mechanical prophylaxis and actually concludes that the use of IVC filters as the only method of prophylaxis before bariatric surgery is not recommended. SAGES, these are actually old guidelines now. SAGES, over 10 years ago, published guidelines for DVT prophylaxis during laparoscopic surgery. This document is 3 pages long, and it actually has no recommendations, no specific recommendations. And that's not a knock on SAGES. I'm actually still a member. But it just reflects the lack of high-quality literature for DVT or for IVC filtration at the time of bariatric surgery. So Rowland et al. Published this review a couple of years ago looking at the specific question of IVC filters for prevention of VTE perioperatively in bariatric surgery, and really concluded, I think, as most of us would, that there is no clear evidence to suggest that the potential benefits of IVC filters outweigh the significant risks of therapy, those risks being recurrent DVT. So as far as recommendations are concerned for bariatric surgery, in my mind, know the risk factors for VTE in your patients. Decide how worried you are about bleeding. Know the risks of complications with anticoagulants or filters, and then put them on Lovenox, use SEDs, and ambulate them early. Pregnancy is another category that those of us as surgeons are always asked about. Clearly, VTE has a 5 to 6 times higher risk in the pregnant than in the non-pregnant patient. That thrombophilia starts early in pregnancy and lasts up to 2 months postpartum. Sally Harris wrote a nice review of IVC filtration in pregnancy a couple of years ago. And basically, the conclusion is this, that when dealing with the pregnant patient, you should not deviate, as far as indications are concerned, from those indications that you use for the non-pregnant patient. Furthermore, it's reasonable to place the filter both in a suprarenal or an infrarenal position. Both have been found to be safe in pregnancy and in the peripartum period. And then finally, I happen to work at an institution with a comprehensive cancer center. That seems to be a question that we get all the time in vascular surgery: is the cancer patient with VTE. Clearly, cancer confers a higher risk of VTE, particularly after chemotherapy or surgery. IVC filtration has been shown to decrease PE in cancer patients, just as it has in non-cancer patients when placed for the inability to anticoagulate. However, those cancer patients treated with IVC filtration instead of or in addition to anticoagulation have a significantly shorter survival. Unclear why that association exists. Furthermore, they also have a significantly higher complication rate without conferring a survival benefit. So certainly in my practice, I have been very conservative with IVC filtration in cancer patients. And so with that, I'll wrap it up, and hopefully we can have a nice discussion at the end.
Perfect. Thank you, Dr. Gold.